As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
I'm Manveen Rana from The Story, a daily news podcast from The Times. Join me and my co-host, Luke Jones, for a deep dive into the big stories and investigations. Plus, each month, William Hague hosts an agenda-setting interview with a key newsmaker or big thinker. That's The Story, The Times' daily podcast that brings you one remarkable story told in depth. Listen every weekday on the Times Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Game Podcast from The Times. I'm Natalie Sawyer.
And I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and we thank you for joining us on this lovely Monday morning. That's right, it's Christmas Eve. Yay. For those who celebrate Christmas. And we're delighted that, taking a break from the celebrations, in the studio with us, it's Gary Jacob.
Morning, Gabs.
And down the line, from somewhere in between London and the Midlands, if I'm not mistaken, it's Henry Winter.
Hi, Merry Christmas.
Later on, we'll be discussing the race for the top four and Solskjaer bringing the sunshine back to Old Trafford.
But we start with a shock for Manchester City as the champions suffered a 3-2 defeat to Crystal Palace at the Etihad on Saturday. With the leaders Liverpool maintaining their unbeaten record this season, Pep Guardiola's side are now 4 points behind the Reds in the title race. Now, City were 13 points clear at this stage last season. But Henry, it looks like they've got a fight on their hands this time around.
They really do, and it's great for the neutral. It's great for Liverpool fans. All seems to be coming together under Jurgen Klopp. That emotional connection he has with the fans and with the players, that's just created this momentum, as well as the quality of the recruits with Alisson in goal and Virgil van Dijk. He's probably the most important player in the Premier League at the moment if you look at his impact on his club within the dressing room and on the field, scoring goals now. The thing about Manchester City and Guardiola probably hasn't really been in a title race like this for a few years. So, you know, it's a challenge to him. But I think anyone who's followed his career knows he loves challenges. He's the most driven individual I've ever met in football, certainly in the top three. And he's a remarkable, and he will get that team going again. He needs De Bruyne to start. He needs Aguero to start, you know, turning in all those chances. And one of the key things, which I think we highlighted at the start of the season, a lot of people were highlighting, is what do they do when Fernandinho's not ready? Because he's almost the glue in that team that sort of bolts defence to attack. They don't really have a natural replacement for him. I know Delph can play there. Gundogan, for me, is more sort of silkier player to play further forward. John Stones, obviously, has played in their last couple of games. But I still think Fernandinho is just key in there. It's the little sly fouls. It's the leadership, the tactical awareness, covering, nicking the ball, the starting moves. He's such a key player for them. So I think when he's back fit again, we'll see a different City.
I don't think that's John Stones' position. I can see what Guardiola was thinking in playing him there instead of Delph, because, you know, Palace are visiting, and you imagine that it's going to be the sort of game where Palace are all back in their box and Stones is almost like a third center half because your defensive line is way up the pitch. But things didn't really unfold that way, did they, against Palace?
No, they didn't. Look, you know, there was two sides to every story, and Palace deserve amazing credit for their resilience, for how, well, there's a point Hodgson was making afterwards. He says things don't just happen on a game. We don't see what's been going on down at Beckham at the training ground, the way he drills players, the coaching staff he's got there, the sports science that goes into it, the amount of time he spends looking at Manchester City's setup and think, well, how am I going to get at them? Let's unleash our heart. More centrally, let's have Andros Townsend and pace is difficult to defend against, particularly as you point out with that high line. And their defence was outstanding as well. Full backs, centre backs, you know, they were terrific. So, you know, we have to praise Palace and all this, and their, you know, their band of support is probably one of the best supports in the country in terms of, you know, the noise they generate away from home and obviously particularly at home. So, look, full credit to Palace. they sense the vulnerability to Manchester City, and you have to be quite psychically strong to believe in that. But we have seen it on one or two occasions this season, you know, particularly when Lyon played at the Etihad. If you do play that, well, from what I remember, Lyon just played one up front, and they had pace, and they got at them. So I just think it's great that it's created a title race.
One of our regular listeners complains that we never, ever speak about them other than to talk about Zaha. So I want to give a shout out to two obvious ones, and I'd like you both to name somebody who's not Zaha and is not the two guys I'm about to name. For me, Milivojevic right now is one of the top 10 central midfielders in the Premier League, easy. And also, Wan-Bissaka's been kind of doing it all year. We get so like, oh, look, you know, Roy looks funny on the bench and Zaha's fantastic and blah, blah, blah. And where's Benteke and whatever. But do you guys want to give a shout out to somebody else, a favorite Palace player, not named Luka? Wan-Bissaka or
Gary McArthur's played well this season, hasn't he? I think he's a bit of an unsung hero in that team. I think he's had a decent season. And the other interesting thing is that Guita's now in goal, which he was obviously signed in the summer, didn't get in. Hennessy managed to survive, keep his position. And I think there have been a lot of Palace fans calling for, over time, for Hennessy to be changed. And now that'd be interesting to see whether he stays here. I think the other sort of thing is Van Aanholt, I think, he's had good games, bad games, but actually, generally, I think he's played better this season as well. I think that's the other sort of one.
Henry?
Important.
Gab, why do you think Roy looks weird on the bench? If I'm a player there and I'm looking over the bench, I see years and years of experience. I see someone who has prepared them well during the week. I see a coach with no ego who, when the team does well, he praises them. I see a coach who's bounced back from adversity before with England, with Liverpool, and for a former England manager, doesn't actually seem to carry too much of a chip on his shoulder or has been wounded deeply by it. I'm sure he's hurt by it, but he actually gets on with life. You know, talking to Palace players, and I've interviewed a couple, you know, in recent times, and they are the respect they have for Roy Hodgson. We can call him an elder statesman of the game. Gab, look, you know him very well. I think he's quite a quietly inspiring individual.
To just to clarify, when I say he looks weird on the bench, I don't mean that it's weird that he's managing in the Premier League. I think he's doing a phenomenal job, and there's no questioning. It's simply that a lot of the times, and you can just need to spend 5 minutes on social media to see this, he has this range of facial expressions.
His mannerism,
right? And there's nothing more that TV producers like to do is to get a little 5-second clip. I mean, if you ever watch Match of the Day 2 on that Too Good, Too Bad segment, he's always there, either in surprise or he's rubbing his face or whatever. He just has this wonderfully expressive thing, and sort of the Roy Hodgson meme seems to overshadow whatever Palace does. In terms of the work he's doing with the resources he has, and, oh, should I have my gratuitous pop at Steve Parrish? Yes. And the chairman he has, he's doing a phenomenal job.
But he has looked fairly miserable in the last few months. I mean, you sort of see him in the flesh, and By the press conferences, he's given the impression that he's unhappy with, maybe because he didn't have money to spend at Palace, but generally unhappy, or maybe a bit fed up of the job. He's certainly not been as perky as he could have been.
He spent a lot of time on this body language thing, though, Gary. I mean, like, if when Claude Puel looks miserable or whether he looks happy, he always looks exactly the same, right? Roy Hodgson has a much wider range of facial expressions.
What's wrong with that? I mean, look, life is not all Hollywood, Gab. If there is someone who goes on to, it stands in the dugout, and the emotion of the game, because he loves the game so much and he wants Palace to do so well, if his emotions are portrayed in certain ways, then, you know, I know some managers who will check their hair in the mirror before they go out of the dugout. I could name them. I mean, look, Neil Warnock is the type, whenever you go in an interview, Neil Warnock, you always get an impression he's just checked himself in the mirror. And look, Neil Warnock is doing a fantastic job, but you don't judge him like that. And that's why you shouldn't judge Roy Hodgson, just because the emotion of the game gets to him and it manifests itself in certain ways. And to be honest, if we're judging managers on gifts and memes, then, well,
I completely agree with you. It just seems
I would rather look at the whole stretch of Roy Hodgson's career rather than sort of 5 seconds dreamed up by some television producer who's just out of film school.
you know what?
Totally agree.
Yes. Let's move on, or move back to the title race, shall we? Manchester City versus Liverpool is coming up on the 3rd of January. Liverpool host Arsenal the weekend before. It's a huge period then coming up for Jurgen Klopp's team. Henry, if they can come through it unscathed, the belief will surely be through the roof at Anfield.
The belief is there anyway. I think just talking to some of the players and, you know, you just listen to Klopp at the start of the season. Look, they're not shouting. There's a humility. It's embodied by Virgil van Dijk. When Henderson came on the other day against Manchester United, Virgil van Dijk handed the armband to whichever player was going off and said, give it to Henderson. That is the type of humility you've got in that team. You've got Virgil van Dijk, who's this magnificent player, a natural leader. Players all look to him. But Henderson is the club captain. Henderson's come on, and Virgil van Dijk goes and does it. Just little things like that give you a glimpse into the soul and the substance of Liverpool Football Club. Klopp will absolutely drive that team. And I don't think the fans will get carried away. They will remember the Steven Gerrard slip. They will remember how close they've gone to before. But the fact they've got a team playing this way, with the exuberance, with Trent Alexander-Arnold sort of coming through, one of our own. Trent Alexander-Arnold will go training tomorrow morning, Christmas Day, and then he'll go to the This Is Anfield Pier Hotel, just on the back of Anfield Road. And he will spend a couple of hours serving up food and handing out presents that he's paid for himself for this charity, an hour for others. And that is the substance of these people there. He doesn't want to make a big thing about it, but actually he will just go and do that because that's the type of individual he is. We look at the character of James Milner, the goalkeeper, Robertson, arguably in the top three best left-backs in the world at the moment. He's been outstanding, humble individual, used to sell programmes at one of his first clubs just to sort of make some money for the clubs and a few quid for himself. These are individuals who have not all had it handed to them. Mo Salah hasn't been a superstar all his career. Look at the work that he's putting. People were writing him off at the start of the season, saying, oh, one season wonder, won't recover from Ramos, won't recover from the World Cup. Look at how he's going again. Look at the technical brilliance of his goal the other day. You could go through all that team, and they've got other players coming back too. So, look, there's a humility about Liverpool as well as the individual and collective class.
This season, with your subscription to The Times and The Sunday Times, you can watch every highlight and every goal from every game in the Premier League. It's just £8 for an 8-week trial. Saturday delivered spectacular entertainment, and we saw something similar on Sunday at Goodison Park, especially if you are a Spurs fan. Maurizio Pochettino's players ran riot, winning 6-2 at Everton to tighten their grip on a top four spot. Now, Gab, there are Tottenham fans who'll be listening and who might be asking, why are Tottenham not being considered as title contenders? After all, they're only just 2 points off Manchester City, 6 off the leaders Liverpool. Why can't they win the title?
Well, you can throw the question at the bookies. The bookies, I think you can get them at 16-1 to win the Premier League.
Okay.
You know, I think you have to sort of project forward, and the Champions League is a major priority for Manchester City. If City advance, if Liverpool advance, if Tottenham don't, and you can kind of hunker down the way Leicester did when they won the title, the way Chelsea did when they won the title under Antonio Conte, I think it makes a big difference because I think it really takes a ton out of you. That said, I think there is simply a gap in quality and everything has to go right. I mean, we're talking about a City team where De Bruyne has hardly featured this year. We're talking about a City team that they dropped some points now, but Sergio Aguero's coming back. We're talking about a City team that should they need to buy somebody in January, they can probably go out and get somebody really, really good with their eyes closed. You know, that's at the heart of the issue. We're talking about a Liverpool team that, if push came to shove, I think would prioritize winning the Premier League over having another go at the Champions League if they ever, you know, had to make that kind of decision. So I think those are the main reasons why you can't really speak of a three-horse race right now because, you know, certainly Spurs simply don't have the resources that the other two teams do.
Depth of squad, I think the cover up front for Kane, it's all the old questions. And I think most Spurs fans will turn around and say they were playing better in previous years than they are now. And a lot of Spurs fans will sort of look at that two seasons where they were playing wonderfully well. They were beaten by Leicester and beaten by Chelsea. Sometimes with Pochettino, you ask him whether there's a mentality question at Spurs, and he says, well, maybe they need to take the next step, or maybe the players just don't have it.
And it's a bit harsh, Henry. Why is Gary being so harsh on Spurs?
No, I don't think Gary is. I think he's making a general point about the direction of travel and the developing. And I think if you look at two players in particular, Harry Kane is playing as a nine. We know he can do that, but he's also been playing as a 10. I mean, you're seeing players develop because of their own individual drive, but also because of the outstanding coaching of Pochettino and his assistants. Look at Kane. He's been dropping back. He's been creating space. He's been playing some fantastic balls in. Look at Dele Alli. Dele Alli is playing almost like a box-to-box midfielder. We've seen him tracking back. We've seen him getting forward. You're actually seeing, maybe they're not hitting the very, very heights, the spectacular heights that we've seen in the past, but I think there's more rounded, accomplished players. We are seeing the flowering of two particular talents with Kane and Dele Alli, as well as all the other individuals in there. Harry Winks is taking responsibility at a young age. Christian Eriksen, I mean, and all that. Trippier had a little dip and he's sort of coming back into form. They're good players in that. But the thing is, they definitely have another gear to go up individually and collectively. I agree with Gary's point about the sort of the depth of squad, and that is an issue. And that is something that, in a way, Spurs fans are complaining about that the media keeping on linking Pochettino with Manchester United. But actually, that will probably help Pochettino going into the transfer window to say to Daniel Levy, listen, we know there are lots of electrical work that still needs to be done at the stadium, whatever. But we do need another, you know, a bit more. We need another striker, as Gary says, and maybe more help at the back.
I think I know we're going to talk about the sort of the window soon, but that is interesting to see once we go beyond January. That sort of thing about Pochettino, United, Real Madrid is going to come noisier and noisier, depending on what happens in January. And you kind of wonder how the Tottenham players are going to deal with that, and the club are going to, and how he's going to deal with that general noise that's going to be in the background.
Can I get a sense from you guys, just because personally, I was dealing with a guy on Twitter over this, who's actually a vicar, or claims to be one. There's a picture of him with, or somebody looks like a vicar anyway. And
he'll be busier this time of the year.
You would think so. Henry, he complained that the media are doing Manchester United's dirty work for them. In other words, that they're reporting that Pochettino is a target for Manchester United, and in so doing, they're destabilizing Tottenham. And he argued that the media should have had a responsibility not to do this.
Well, I tell you what, I'm sure there'll be some vicars in Bournemouth complaining about the media trying to get Eddie Howe to Tottenham. Look, all the media are doing is actually just reflecting the fairly straightforward signals that are coming out of Manchester United, which have been coming out for the last sort of 2-3 years, probably longer, ever since Ferguson had lunch with Pochettino. The Pochettino is highly admired within Old Trafford and Carrington. And I think that is clear as day. And actually, Spurs should take it as a compliment. I know it's disrupting. I can understand former players getting annoyed by it. Pochettino could, of course, give the whole thing off now by saying, I'm committed to that. I want to bed us into a new stadium. I think he's very cute. I think he might use it to get more funds in the summer. But look, he's ambitious. And with a great will in the world, Manchester United, for all their problems, are a step up. Having said that, I'm not sure now is the best time to leave Tottenham Hotspur with that magnificent new stadium and a magnificent team, which will be even better over the next sort of 2-3 years. So Pochettino's in a wonderful position. But look, you're right, this story is going to run and run and run. And it's going to accelerate when the international breaks occur and we all get to sit down and talk to the England players.
If you're a Man United fan, you want to know who we're going to go for in the summer.
Well, is it right for Manchester United to tell the media that Pochettino is a target? I think that's what he was questioning.
Yeah, but all journalists have sources and you get information, and so the better journalists get better information and they put it out. What are they going to do with it? Sit on it?
Well, let's talk about the transfer window. Gary, you mentioned we're going to mention it, so let's talk about it. How big is this January going to be then for those clubs chasing the top four, Tottenham, Arsenal and Chelsea? Who do you think Gary needs to do business the most?
Arsenal probably defenders. I don't think Arsenal thought they were going to be in this position, but they're probably in a sort of better position than they thought they were going to be at this time of year. And chance for the top four, which probably no one would have envisaged. So maybe just in defenders. Chelsea, maybe a striker. You know, people look at them and think Morata, Giroud. Then you look at them games and think, are they going to score enough goals? Tottenham, central midfield. But then it's a January transfer window, and where do you get the players and what prices and what wages? And you know, are you going to be able to kind of get those players? So I think at Tottenham are interested because Henry obviously made the point that the whole Man United thing is Pochettino, a bit of sort of flexibility to go into Levy and try and push him in a corner. But, you know, if you're Levy, you're a few things. One is it's January, so do you really want to spend overpay on players? Can you get the players? And then even if you did buy the players for him, Pochettino in 3 months' time could say, thanks, guys, I'm off anyway. So then you're then lumbered with players you don't really want, or maybe your new manager doesn't want. So I think when you look at this January transfer window, it could give you an indication whether Pochettino is staying or not staying. And certainly if Spurs don't spend money, Pochettino will be saying stuff in the media. He's not shy about saying stuff about not spending.
Well, sorry, on the Spurs point, I mean, two big players for them, Eriksen and Alderweireld. What's the situation there?
Well, they've got slightly different conflicting situations. They've got a clause on Toby, which they can tick the box on, which gives them another year. But in exchange, he can go for around about $25 million for a period in the summer. So whether they tick the box or whether they say to him, look, let's patch up and let's give him your 3-year contract, let's forget about the arguments and let's sit down. But again, that could be dependent on Pochettino's there. Eriksen's got a year to go, and Eriksen and his agent have been pretty cute, and they seem to be doing what Courtois and Hazard are doing, taking it to the final year and then pushing the club into the corner. And then either way, they're a winner.
Well, you mentioned there about Chelsea. Obviously, they're struggling up front with Giroud and Morata. They've lost two of the last four, although they did beat Manchester City in that time. They're struggling for consistency, aren't they, Gab?
Yeah, I think in terms of results, I mean, what I would say is it's obviously it jumps out at you, right, that the striker, the situation with the strikers and Hazard is to play up front, and are they Hazard dependent? This is not what Sarri wants. Sarri wants his teams to be system dependent. So obviously, I think it's an issue for them. I think they are going to try to do something in January if Morata doesn't regain his mojo, which he obviously hasn't done yet. What I would say, though, is that both against Wolves and against Leicester, those are games that they should have won. They certainly created enough chances to win. Against Leicester, really, I thought there was maybe 1.5 chances that they conceded the entire game, and they had many more chances to score, not least the one at the end with Alonso. And against Wolves as well, they absolutely flattened them. And then after Wolves got that equalizer, they fell apart. So I think by and large, they are pretty much where they want to be in terms of development. They have issues that they need to address, and I think that's certainly one of them. Another one, which I thought we might see sooner, he's so fixated on playing the same people all the time. I think Christensen is a better player than maybe even both center backs, and I find it extraordinary that he's not getting into the team.
Henry, Gary mentioned, of course, that Arsenal might want to strengthen. Bear in mind that they are now perhaps chasing a top four spot. They have, it's only City, I should say, they've scored more goals than Arsenal this season. So they might possibly be outsiders in the race for the top four, but they have rediscovered their smile, haven't they?
Well, they have. I think the restructuring behind the scenes, I think they move more intelligently and slightly more quickly in the transfer market. You look at some of the players they bought in, particularly Torreira, the goalkeeper Leno as well. What I like about Emery working with Sanen, people behind the scenes, is that they've targeted issues and addressed them. As Gary says, they still need centre-backs. They've had some bad injuries. They've got some ageing players. They've got some players who do still make mistakes. I think a top-class striker can get at Socrates, even though he's been quite good in recent weeks. He seems to be becoming almost de facto leader of the team. I still think they need to sort out the Aaron Ramsey situation. I still find it strange that a player of his quality is being allowed to run down his contract in the old Wenger style and allowed to leave. I still think they probably need an out-and-out winger. I know they like Emery likes his fullbacks to sort of push up and bury in. It's almost a de facto winger on the right. But I still think they need that. But look, I've been so impressed with Emery and everything he's done. He's taken a lot of the politics out of the situation. Even at the weekend when Sean Dyche was having a go at the diving, Emery dealt with the whole thing in a very sort of calm way. And you see him on the touchline and he's exuding authority. He's obviously involved. The players like him. I like it when Lacazette starts up front with Aubameyang rather than coming on. I think that position also suits Ozil best as a number 10. I still think he needs to do it week in, week out. But I think, again, Emery's decisiveness, leaving him out in certain games, challenging him, I think it's brilliant for Ozil, who's had a good career. Obviously, he's won a World Cup. But I still think that a lot of the jury around the world is out on Ozil. And I think if he can have a golden 2 years under Emery, if he really applies himself, then that, you know, he will go down as, you know, one of the best players of the last sort of 20 years. But he needs that consistency and to do it against the leading teams. But again, that is Emery is challenging these players, which they haven't been challenged in recent years under Wenger.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Goals galore across the Premier League then this weekend. Six of them at the Cardiff City Stadium. Five of them scored, though, by Manchester United. What a start then it turned out to be for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as the caretaker manager at Old Trafford. Gary, is it natural that people question the players and their commitment after they produce that kind of a performance as soon as Jose Mourinho is gone?
I think they were probably sort of questioning it before, even before the game, to be fair. So I think, yeah, what it shows is that when you don't really want to play for a manager, I think Cascarino has often said this, when players get fed up playing for the manager, then they just don't do it on the pitch. It becomes 70% running around, sort of cheating in a strange way. And so Saturday the shackles are off, but I don't think any Man United fan is going to look at beating Cardiff as a kind of sort of any barometer of anything. Then their next run is they've got Huddersfield, Burnley, Newcastle, Reading, and then Spurs. So perhaps Spurs is kind of where it's going to be. Can he use the next five games to actually put in place what he wants to put in place? And Spurs is going to be the real barometer of where they are. Can he play in the same forward line? Can he play as he had Marshall in the sort of 10 position there? I mean, does that work against other teams? He had Pogba on the right. Maybe it does work.
But if you score first and you have players of this quality and you're playing Cardiff, then you can play those guys, and you'll have no issue. I just want to go back to this because we published this in our paper, so I am promoting something that's in the paper. Mm-hmm. So the last time that United scored five goals, incredibly, was Sir Alex Ferguson's last game, that 5-5 draw with West Brom. And when people go on about how, you know, when he took the job, he was advised by a friend that he needed to change at least 10 players immediately. They weren't good enough, blah, blah, blah. I appreciate it was the last game of the season. They'd won the title, so maybe he switched some guys in. But I'm looking at this team that drew 5-5, and you had Lindegaard, you had Johnny Evans, Phil Jones. Same Phil Jones is still there, only older and more injured. You have Alexander Butner. Who remembers him? Ooh. You had Anderson, who's the size of a house. You had Michael Carrick, who was old even back then. You had Scholes and Giggs, who were even older back then. You had Tom Cleverley, who's gone on to bigger and better things elsewhere. You had Shinji Kagawa, who can get onto the pitch at Dortmund. And you had Chicharito, and you had old Van Persie. Can we just knock this on the head about the quality in Manchester United squad? These are good players. And I know it's an incredibly sort of trite thing to say, that if you send them out there with the handbrake off and the enthusiasm and ding-dong the witch is dead and blah, 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 they're going to produce away from home, especially when they score early and Cardiff has to some degree come out at them, and then you've got fast strikers. This is a good squad. These are good players. Yes, Gary?
The present squad, yeah. If anything, it's got, how do you fit them all in? Especially up top where, and you've now got the issue of Sanchez. Does Sanchez want to play for Man United, or doesn't he want to play for Man United?
But he's injured, Gary.
Yeah, but okay. But once he's fit. Well, and given that he wants to supposedly go to PSG.
But isn't this the Solskjaer effect, isn't it? We saw Paul Pogba starting, Luke Shaw as well, two players who had drawn the ire of Mourinho on more than a few occasions. Fred came on as a substitute as well. So it does appear that it is a clean slate under Solskjaer right now.
Yeah, and rightly so. And again, I mean, we mock Ed Woodward and the whole, like,
business approach to it, but they just spent, what, $50 million on a midfielder named Fred, who's young enough and who's going to be around and is now has a big contract, and they want to know if he can play. And it's only logical that you then ask your manager, listen, we're chasing fourth place, but we also want to assess the players. And he sees them in training and says, hey, look, he's not a bad player. He doesn't become a bad player because he has some tough games settling in England. And then Mourinho decides, oh, no, you know, you be gone. And let's have more Ander Herrera in the team. Now, I can see why he started Herrera in this match. But I think if you're Manchester United going forward, especially if Solskjaer wants to play the way Solskjaer says he plays, I think there's only room for one out of Herrera and Matic in that midfield. And then you're going to want, you know, the two other guys, assuming he played 4-3-3, to be people who can play, right? Who can play at the attacking end of the pitch. Presumably one of them Pogba, the other one, maybe we'll see Fred, maybe we'll see Lingard. These are your options, right? Am I wrong here, Gary?
No, I think you're right. I think I was just looking at the sort of the headline on our back page about Matic saying blame us for Mourinho's exit, which is, obviously, it's quite remarkable when players...
If you read the quotes, it's a little softer than that. It's not Matic saying, no, it's all our fault, you know, but...
Yeah, but it's always after the effect they come out and say, oh, it's all our fault. Yeah. At the time, they don't say it.
Because no sane person believes that it's all the players. No, but sure, is there anybody...
Yeah, but if
I don't even think Mourinho believes that, do
you? Yeah. But when Mourinho went from Chelsea, there was a bit of feeling amongst the Chelsea fans that actually it was the players who got him out, wasn't it?
Because everybody, we in the media, we repeat the same. Once we get a phrase in our head, we repeat it forever, right? So with Solskjaer, it's the handbrake is off. No. And with Mourinho, it's like, well, they downed tools. What the hell does that mean? They downed tools. What is it? Are we working in a factory? They downed tools?
Well, but if it
it's so stupid, it becomes a cliche, and they repeat it, and the ex-pros on television keep repeating the phrase as well, and it's a stupid trite phrase. Come up with a different expression. Sorry, Gary.
Okay, but if it's true, and you would have seen more Chelsea of me than that time, and if that's true, and Fabregas was pretty sharpish to come out at that point and say, no, we loved Mourinho, and I love Mourinho, which is kind of, you know, almost players come out often and trying to kind of clean themselves up from the image, because at that point the Chelsea fans weren't happy with the idea Mourinho, with the players that turned on him. But why, if you're a Man United player, why would you come out and say blame us? You don't need to. You can say, look, it wasn't right for us.
It is time now for the results of our weekly predictions game, where we pick five matches from the weekend and try and predict the score. Now, we went for the game at St James's Park, where I went for a 1-0 win to Newcastle. Gab, you went for a 1-0 win for Fulham. Neither of us predicted a goalless draw.
Yeah, I felt a little bit let down by my man Claudio there. I thought that they could have nicked this. Now, we both expected Manchester United to win at Cardiff, although neither of us saw them pummeling the Bluebirds to the extent that they did. We also both went for Bayern to win at Eintracht Frankfurt. Neither one of us guessed the correct score on a 3-0, but I should point out...
Oh, here we go.
...that I had it. It's 2-0, yes. It's the 89th minute, and then stupid Rafinha scores another one. So lucky.
Oh.
So lucky.
What,
if you don't
want
to watch the highlight. Seriously.
So it finished 3-0, so...
But it should have been 2-0.
But
it was
3-0. We both predicted a 1-1 draw between Portsmouth and Sunderland, but it was the League One leaders, Pompey, who ran out 3-1 winners, which means it all boiled down to events at Goodison Park. Now, Gab, you went for an Everton win. What were you thinking?
Well, Everton took the lead, and then Pickford screwed everything up for everybody, and then Eriksen scores a worldie, and then that's it.
That was it. Game over. Yes, I went for the Tottenham win. Victory then for them, victory for me, meaning I am now 11-5 ahead this season. I'm enjoying it, Gab. It's great.
You enjoy it. It's all going to change in the new year. Enough of these stupid predictions. How about some quick hits instead? Sean Dyche is an angry man. He has basically accused a bunch of Arsenal players of, quote, blatant cheating, and says he's the only manager who cares about diving, and he wants the rules around simulation changed. Gary, has he gone mad? Does he really think he's the only manager?
I think they all complain about this.
No, only Sean Dyche does.
Yeah.
And it's blatant cheating. Are Arsenal blatant cheats?
No, all players do this now. It's a curse of the modern era. You get the players wait for the contact and go down.
What's really funny about this
defenders do it more, don't they? Because they're just trying to get themselves out of situations. Well,
he got angry over that Kevin Long push.
Yeah.
Now, and he says Kevin Long went down naturally. Watch it again. How is that natural? It may well have been a penalty. I'm not saying it wasn't.
Soft.
What? It might have been soft, whatever. It's two hands on the back. But that's not a natural way to go down.
But also, you know, the FA have looked at simulation, but it only applies in when a player's sent off and a red card. And how are you going to possibly, that Eduardo situation, how are you going to define the amount of contact that it needs to get for a player
to go
down?
Just let Sean Dyche decide.
So is he going to join the three-man panel?
No, just have him decide on the sidelines. Have him call the penalties.
What, in every game apart from Burnley?
Well, just the ones he plays in.
Okay.
Okay, let's move it on to Watford, who are back up to seventh for the 2-0 win away to West Ham. There's Ben Foster, Craig Cathcart, Will Hughes, Troy Deeney, Andre Gray. Gary, is it all down to their British core then?
That's a good question. I think Ben Foster, I saw him recently against Man City, and I thought he really impressed me, and I thought he's definitely quite a big factor. I don't really buy the British core, to be honest. And also,
really?
Watford, no, I don't. And also, Watford went on a very long run without actually having a win until, was it last week? So I'm not sure I buy that whole British core thing.
Natalie, one for you.
Yes.
Last week, I asked you what Steve McLaren was up to, even though I knew.
You did.
What's Steve Bruce up to these days?
Wow.
I thought he'd be in line to, based on Paulinho's recommendation, to be the new interim coach at Manchester United.
Oh, no. No. He's, what, been out away from football for just over 2.5 months, I would say.
That's a lifetime in Steve Bruce years.
Indeed, I know. That was after a sacking from Aston Villa, but he's now being tipped to take over at Sheffield Wednesday. That's after the Owls parted company with Jos Luhukay on Friday. Two of Bruce's former backroom staff at Villa, Steve Agnew and coach Stephen Clements, they were spotted at Hillsborough for Saturday's win over Preston. So that's obviously added to the speculation because they were spotted at the game. Lee Bullen, the caretaker boss of Sheffield Wednesday after the win, said that it would be doing the right thing for Sheffield Wednesday if they appoint Bruce. Let's not forget his track record as well. He's been promoted to the Premier League four times as a manager. It's been 18 years since Sheffield Wednesday were in the top division.
I miss the Owls. And Gary, you must like him because you're part of that same fraternity of people whose last name is a first name, right?
This year, to save them from tears, Saints fans are giving their heart to Hasenhüttl. Oh. And of course, he won again, this time a 3-1 victory at Huddersfield. Gary, did you think his impact would be so immediate?
No, I saw the first two games. And when you saw them at Cardiff, I thought he's got a massive job on his hand. But to be fair, they played very well against Arsenal and they're certainly running more. And you can tell he's actually got them working a lot harder in training. I think Redmond looks a completely different player and Ings looks a completely different player. So fair play to him.
Well, we have a piece here, or his headline, Hasenhüttl call for speed pays off for Southampton. Obviously, he is all about speed, and as I do every Monday morning, I go on YouTube and I watch the Rocky montage, the training montage from Rocky 2 after, you know, Adrian wakes up.
Every Monday you watch this montage?
Of course. It's very therapeutic. One where, like, you know, Adrian wakes up from her coma and she's like, you know, Rock, win. And I always think of, throughout his training routine, you've got Mickey, the old trainer, mm-hmm. one who looks insane. All he does is he just keeps shouting, speed, speed, speed. So that's kind of imagine, like, because Hasenhüttl's the opposite of Mickey, because Hasenhüttl's young and Mickey's old and Hasenhüttl's big and Mickey's small and Irish and angry. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of how I imagine it. We're all David Brooks fans by this point, and it's wonderful that the young Welshman was integral to Bournemouth's 2-0 win. But Gary, I want to bring up something else, something that really I find extraordinary. Mike Dean, at one point, it looks like he got Lewis Dunk and Eve Bissouma muddled up. He shows Lewis Dunk a yellow card. It's obviously Bissouma who commits the foul. It wouldn't have mattered if not for the fact that Dunk later gets another yellow and gets sent off. Do you see the strong physical resemblance between Bissouma and Dunk? No, can you explain this?
No, I can't. I think it was a genuine mistake. I think when you look at it, it's just a mistake. You can see they both go into the challenge, but he's short of it, isn't he, Dunk? So, but there is another part of the equation. If you're the player on the yellow, you're just a bit more careful, surely. You know, going for the second
maybe he didn't know he was booked.
I think he did, yeah.
I think he knew he was booked. But did you see when he got the second yellow, as Mike Dean takes out the card, he goes, off you pop.
He actually
says that. Yeah, he does. It's brilliant. There is a great, I have to say, there's a great Twitter account called Celebrity Refs. You have to watch it because it's brilliant.
Celebrity Refs.
He must feature quite a lot with his goal celebration, for this goal celebration as well.
There's all that. The way that Mike Dean does feature quite heavily, just the fact that he's very over the top with some of his gesturing, it's brilliant. It's well worth
looking
at.
I'm assuming he's close to retirement, so like, he doesn't care anymore. He can just act like the biggest freak out there and be as theatrical as he likes and
Have a look at that Twitter account. You'll see what I mean. Wonderful. Off your pop.
Off your pop. That's wonderful.
Off your pop. Gab, one for you. I note you wrote about Cristiano Ronaldo today. How's he finding getting goals in Serie A this season?
Well, it's one of those things, right? So we deal in stereotypes. So the perception is that he was going to score less this year in Serie A because supposedly the league is more defensive and there's less goals, which incidentally isn't true. There was one fewer goal scored in Serie A last season than in La Liga. I think what does matter is he plays for a team that simply scores less and that doesn't run up the score. You know, Real Madrid had games where, you know, they're 3-0 up and they keep attacking and attacking and attacking. Juve, they go 1-0 up, and I'm not saying they stop attacking, but they're pretty content with managing the game. So he scored 12 goals thus far this season, which the lowest he's had at this stage of the season, going back like 10 years, was 17 goals. But that said, he's still super important to the side. He has a whole bunch of assists, 7 assists at this stage. He's shooting just as much as he was before, but I think he's just, as he's getting older, he's just kind of evolved into a different role, and obviously Juventus absolutely flying in Serie A.
Is he top scorer?
No. Top scorer is a Polish man named Lukasz Piątek, who nobody would have imagined that he scored a whole bunch of goals at the start of the year. People thought he'd tail off, but he's still in there. Yeah, he's got 2 more goals than he does.
That is it for now. Many thanks to our guests today, Henry Winter and Gary Jacob.
Remember, you can subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times. That's right, you get The Sunday Times too. And that allows you to enjoy award-winning journalism online and on your smartphone or tablet. It's just £1 a week for an 8-week trial. What do you need to do to get all this goodness? Search The Times subscription for more information.
Now, Gab, you're away now, aren't you? So it's just me on Thursday.
That's right.
And my guests, of course.
That's right. I'll be off skiing in the German-speaking bit of Italy, up in the Dolomites.
Ooh,
surrounded
lovely.
By Hans and Wolfgang, except they're Italian.
How lovely. Well, enjoy that.
Thank you.
But yes, we'll be back on Thursday after the Boxing Day bonanza of football. And of course, we'll be looking ahead to Liverpool versus Arsenal.
And we'll be looking forward to your gifts from your holiday.
What presents would you like me to bring back from a bunch of German guys?
Since you spend more time with Natalie than you do with me, I think she should probably call the shot on this one.
Oh, goodness, I have no idea. Something authentic but delicious.
Authentic, but you realize this is the German speaking part of Italy.
I know, but they might have something.
No, they do. They got that. It's very scenic. It's all wintry and Germanic. I'll try to find something suitably appropriate.
How lovely.
For you
some
and
bratwurst.
For Charlie to do so. No, not bratwurst.
We should say a Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thank you. And happy holidays to all of you.
The Game is brought to you by The Times. For more information and more podcasts from The Times, head to thetimes.co.uk.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
How
would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.